This is The Sweeper, the global football podcast with the best worldwide news and stories from the beautiful game, with Lee Wingate and Paul Watson.
Coming up on this episode, geopolitical tensions are rising high at the CAF Confederations Cup in Algeria, a club from Rodriguez Island makes the long journey to Mauritius, and a second-tier team reaches the Romanian Cup final. Hello and welcome to the Sweeper podcast, the home of world football with myself, Lee Wingate, and my co-host Paul Watson. We're going to begin our latest whistle-stop tour of the football world in Africa, where a controversial geopolitical incident has caused some major embarrassment for CAF, African football's governing body. Paul, I feel like ever since the listeners told us that Africa was our least covered continent, we've actually done quite a bit of content on it.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think it's a fair point that we don't give Africa as much space as we probably should. But yeah, it seems like suddenly there's a lot going on in Africa. And I don't know if that's just that we're now more determined to keep an eye out for it, or whether it's been quite a dramatic couple of weeks or week in Africa.
It's certainly been a dramatic weekend. Let me tell you about what happened in the run-up to the CAF Confederations Cup semi-final. So this competition is basically like the African Europa League. So essentially, the continent's secondary club competition. And the semi-final first leg was supposed to take place on Sunday evening between USM Alger of Algeria and RS Berkane of Morocco. The RS Berkane delegation flew to Algeria on Friday, where they were detained at the airport and their kits were confiscated because their kits contained a map of Morocco, including the territories of Western Sahara, which Morocco claims sovereignty over, but is widely not recognised by most UN member states. So they confiscated the kits, but the players are allowed to leave. They simply held back a few people that were heading the delegation. But then the players decided that they wanted to go back into the airport in solidarity until their kits had been returned. So you essentially had one of these scenes, and I think we've talked about them in the context of CONCACAF football before, where there's just a mass detention of a squad at the airport and they're all waiting to get their kits back.
Oh yeah, and that's a really bad look for CAF, that it just sounds like pure chaos and that this wasn't dealt with in the build-up, because they probably could have seen this coming, could they not, in that a shirt with any kind of logo that could be contentious on it should be discussed surely with the two parties in advance rather than at the airport hours before a match.
Yeah, I think you could say both yes and no, because on the one hand, there is a history of tension between Morocco and Algeria, which we'll go into in a minute. But on the other hand, CAF had given the green light for RS Berkane to play in this shirt with this map for the whole season. So it's not really like anything had changed. And so CAF came down on the side of RS Berkane and told the Algerian authorities that they needed to return the shirts. So the Berkane players left the airport, basically having stipulated that they will only go ahead and play this game if the kits are returned on time. So they got to their hotel, prepared for the match as usual, went to the stadium, were in the changing rooms, and the kits never arrived. Surprise, surprise. And yeah, basically what happened is they refused to go out onto the field. And now we have a situation where the semi-final of a major continental club competition is all up in the air. We don't know whether CAF are going to come down on the side of Berkane and say that the Algerian authorities shouldn't have intervened. We don't know if the tie will still just go ahead and be replayed. We don't know if they'll punish Berkane because they didn't take to the field. So it's all really unclear how this is going to pan out.
Yeah, and as you say, it's a really difficult jurisdiction because usually you'd say the team that don't take to the field are punished, right? That's the general rule. But if a team is not taking to the field because a kit they've been allowed to use has been confiscated, I think that makes it a very different case. So yeah, it's really, really complicated and fairly unprecedented, I'd say. We've certainly had jersey-related issues and controversies in the past, but I don't think I've ever known one like this one.
Yeah, I think the one that happened for the Ukraine shirt ahead of the last Euros, this is where they had a shirt which contained a map of Crimea, which was annexed by Russia in 2014. And there was a complaint from Russia about this kit, which then FIFA intervened and said, no, they can play in this kit because it's a UN recognized border. But I think they were forced to remove the Glory to Ukraine slogan from the back of their collar. So we have seen incidents like this before, but they are relatively few and far between. But I think it perhaps is not a surprise that one happened between Morocco and Algeria, because there is history here. There was a major geopolitical incident before at the 2022 Africa Nations Championship in Algeria. Before I dive into that, though, let's tell the listeners, what is the Africa Nations Championship? Because it's famously not the Africa Cup of Nations.
Confusingly, it's not. No, it is very similar in that this is an international football competition for teams in Africa, but players have to be playing their football within Africa. So not necessarily domestically in their domestic national league of their country, although I'd say the big majority are, but yeah, within Africa as a continent.
Yeah, and the incident that took place at the 2022 edition was again between Morocco and hosts Algeria. And I think it was a big blow for Morocco because they'd won the 2018 competition, the 2020 competition, and here they were gunning for the treble in their neighboring country, but they couldn't get there because essentially their flight authorization to go from Rabat in Morocco to Constantine in Algeria was refused, and they never made it to the tournament in the end.
It's absolutely crazy, isn't it? I mean, I've heard of, you know, teams getting a cold reception from places where, you know, there's political tensions, but to not even allow them in the country seems kind of a harsh way of dealing with the situation. So did they just carried on the tournament without them as if nothing had happened?
Yeah, I think this happened in the sort of direct build-up to the tournament. And what that essentially meant is there wouldn't have been really any time to bring in another international team. And so, yeah, it went ahead with a three-team group. The group was Madagascar, Ghana and Sudan, minus favourites Morocco.
It feels like there must have been some punishments meted out there, surely, by CAF, because you can't just kick a team out of a tournament because you don't like them or don't want them to come to your country, right? That definitely feels like a pretty clear-cut case, that one.
What do you think if this was in Europe and we had a competition where international teams could only pick players based in their own domestic leagues? Who do we think would do well and perhaps not so well in that?
I think even though things have changed a bit, and with obviously very notable example like Harry Kane, I think England would do well because traditionally fewer English players have travelled and played their football abroad. So I think it would possibly favour England. Not totally sure on how much difference it would make for sort of France, for example. I think it would probably make them a weaker side, or definitely make them a weaker side. And yeah, can you think of any teams that would suddenly like be massively empowered by this? Like, for example, would it help Austria, or would it help, you know, are there any nations that would come out of nowhere and suddenly be powerhouses?
I think both Austria and perhaps the Netherlands might suffer a bit because they do have a lot of players that play in, say, the top five leagues, especially Austria with loads of players in Germany. So I think they might suffer.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. It would certainly be quite an enlightening thing to see, wouldn't it? To see which nations' domestic leagues are effectively shorn of their talent quite early and that talent goes abroad. And obviously that's why this happens in Africa, isn't it? To try and promote players staying in their domestic leagues rather than this exodus that happens very early in Africa where players go into Europe to develop. So seems like a very sensible thing. I would be fascinated to see what would happen in Europe as well.
Onto a non-football topic now, but sticking with North Africa, I feel like I have to give a quick mention to British endurance athlete Russ Cook, who recently became the first person to run the length of the continent from Cape Town to Tunisia. And it was almost Algeria who scuppered his mission as well, because he couldn't initially get a visa to cross the border from Mauritania to Algeria, which he did ultimately get. So he completed his mission, an amazing effort. Paul, imagine going to another continent to take on an impossible sporting task and coming away from it with plenty of plaudits and a Wikipedia page. Not something you've ever done, I'd imagine.
Oh, I like them being compared to someone who's pulled off one of the most extreme endurance feats in sort of recent human history. I feel that's a very flattering comparison. No, I mean, absolutely incredible what he did. He also he wore football shirts on quite a few legs. So it's quite fun seeing him sort of running through the desert in various random football shirts.
Yeah, I think in total he covered 16,000 kilometers in 16 countries over 352 days and crossed the finish line in Tunisia wearing the sort of blue England shirt.
Amazing. And did you see the guy who, there must be a story, but there's a guy who runs alongside him for the last like 100 meters who looks like he's trying to make it all about him. It must be some like local guide or something, but he's like waving the flag and he's running alongside as if he's the guy that's run the entire distance. It was a brilliant bit of sort of John Terry in full kit moment there.
Certainly a commendable feat. I mean, it's not quite as good as walking to all seven football stadiums in Liechtenstein in the space of 24 hours.
That's his next target, I think.
Surely has to be. Surely has to be. Let's move on to another African football story, although this one is 9,000 kilometres away. Rodrigues Island, an island of 108 kilometres squared, located 560 kilometres east of Mauritius in the Indian Ocean. Why is it on our radar, Paul?
Because a team from Rodrigues Island called Rising FC have travelled to mainland Mauritius to compete in Mauritius's FA Cup. And they've done pretty well so far. They actually won their first game against HPC U17s. They won 4-1 and they've gone through to the last 16, and this match will be played after this goes out, so the weekend after. And they're playing against Blackthorns, who won a game on penalties against the brilliantly named Rochebois Bolton City Youth Club. It's amazing. There are some brilliant names, though. It is worth mentioning that one of the biggest clubs in Mauritius are called, I'll butcher this one, Pamplemousse, which I believe, Lee, I have to remind you, you speak French. That means, what's that mean?
Grapefruit, I think.
Grapefruit. So they are called Grapefruit SC, but I think it's a region of Mauritius. So I don't think it's quite as brilliant as if they were just called randomly Grapefruit, but it's a good name nonetheless.
Now they've got some more good names there. They've got FC Dodo, no trophies since 1968 and no current mention of them online. So I can only presume that they are extinct.
Yes.
Had to be done. Petite Rivière Noire, Little Black River, Cercle de Joachim, Joachim's Circle, who are currently top of the domestic league. Yeah, there's a few interesting ones in there.
Yeah, no, they're full of great names. But yeah, it's lovely to see this team come across from Rodrigues Island, which, you know, has a hugely passionate football following on that island. And you can see they have a tournament that takes place there. And the crowds are huge, sort of packed into this very sort of rustic looking football pitch. So it's lovely to see this team coming over and travelling to play. And yeah, I didn't know much about football in Mauritius until we started to report on the teams from Rodrigues. And it is actually a fascinating place and some really interesting dynamics at play. So I don't know how much you know, Lee, but basically in 1999, there was quite a big sort of change in Mauritian football. And it came about because of a pretty terrible incident. I don't know if you've ever heard about this.
No, I haven't. Until we were doing the research for this pod, I didn't know about this at all. But I believe it centres around the team now known as Pamplemousse, because they used to be called Fire Brigade Sports Club. And they no longer are because of, I think, what you're about to tell us.
Yes, exactly. And if it weren't so tragic, it would be almost kind of darkly funny. But there was a riot at a game between Fire Brigade Sports Club and Scouts Club, who also have now been renamed as Port Louis Sporting Club. Now, the idea that a Fire Brigade Sports Club would be involved in a riot would be faintly comic, except it was a horrible, tragic incident because it lasted for 3 days and seven people actually died. It was such a massive incident. It was like a huge, huge moment in Mauritian football and how football had become so partisan that there were these horrible scenes playing out. And so what the government did was it banned football for 18 months. So back in 1999, they just said, look, this has got out of hand. There will be no more football. And this is, you know, something you don't see very often in any country, that football was just banned. And what they did then was they restructured the whole football system, basically, because they regionalized teams. So they made sure that the clubs were just representing a region rather than it being about ethnicity or religion. Now, I think that was what was at the heart of the viciousness of these conflicts, was that teams would represent religious and ethnic identities. And as a result, when fans clashed, it was a really, you know, big problem. Whereas I think the idea was that by having you just represent a region, it would remove that sense of tension. What it actually seems to have done in a lot of people's eyes is it's sort of killed off Mauritian football in a way. So it certainly sort of sterilized it. And it seems like a lot fewer people are now interested in local football than were back then, because they just don't really feel the clubs necessarily represent them.
Yeah, I mean, a crazy situation. And definitely when I think of Mauritius, I think of sort of this idyllic holiday paradise. Definitely not one where there'd be sort of these kind of violent conflicts. But I suppose that shows how little you really know a place from afar when you base your impressions on the internet.
I would have said the same. Absolutely. I mean, it definitely, especially for holidaymakers, if you're going to Mauritius, you're expecting a pretty like luxurious and sort of exotic time. But no, it seems like there is a much darker story there to be had. It's a fascinating place anyway, because of the status of Mauritius in itself. You know, they obviously compete internationally, but there's also this tournament in the region called the Indian Ocean Games, which is a really interesting tournament that takes place. And there you see them competing against Mayotte, Réunion, and you have Seychelles, Maldives, Comoros, and Madagascar. So it's a really fascinating and underreported on regional tournament that happens too there.
That's definitely a life goal of mine now. I'm going to add it to the life goals list. I want to go to the Indian Ocean Games at some point. Worth mentioning, I think, on the topic of Rodriguez Island, before we finish this segment, I just want to throw in one non-football fact that completely blew my mind when I was researching for this. Bearing in mind that Rodriguez Island is located in the middle of the Indian Ocean, when Krakatoa, the volcano, erupted in Indonesia in 1883, it produced the loudest sound that's ever been recorded, and the furthest away place that it could be heard was Rodriguez Island, 4,800 kilometres away.
That's amazing. Well, that is a great fact. That'll come up in a pub quiz somewhere, and you'll have made someone very rich.
I hope so. Actually, I didn't even mention the most bizarre part of the story yet, and that was when the noise of the volcano was heard on Rodriguez Island, they sent out naval ships to investigate because they thought it was the noise of a ship in distress, but it was just a volcano halfway across the world.
Wow. They were different times.
Anyway, back to the football, and we have a bonus podcast to tell you about before we move on to part two. The Patreon episode you can now listen to on patreon.com/sweeperpod. Paul, what are we going to be talking about?
Redknapp and Romario are coming out of retirement, and we've got some stories from the ninth tier in England and Italy. And I believe we've also got a Portuguese Zimmer frame story, but, you know, when haven't we?
Yeah. Path for the course, huh? So if you want to listen to that, patreon.com/sweeperpod. You can also get access to our weekly newsletter, where I believe we'll be telling you all about this North African geopolitical crisis that we mentioned in part one. And you can also get access to our Discord, where you can chat to 200 other fellow pod listeners as well. One last thing for part one. Please do leave us a review if you can. If you're listening on Spotify, there are three dots in the top right corner. Simply click that and hit review show. Or an Apple podcast, scroll down to the bottom of the show page and you can leave a star rating or a written review if you're feeling generous. That really helps us to rank higher in search categories and bring in new listeners. Time now for a quick bit of music, and then we'll be back to European football in part two. Welcome back to part two, and although we promised you Europe in this segment, we are very much clutching at straws. The first story qualifies as European only by virtue of the fact it is in UEFA. We're taking you to the far east of Russia for this one. I did European studies at university, by the way. This story is giving me flashbacks of my degree, because we started off the first semester of the first year trying to define what Europe is. We were still having debates about it by the end of the final semester of the final year. So I never got any closer to finding out what Europe is. But I think...
Sounds like money well spent, that degree.
Yeah. But I think we can safely say that the eastern side of Russia is probably not Europe. The story that we've got here is basically the two most isolated teams within their own domestic league in the world playing each other. So on Sunday, a game took place between the two clubs that are based in the eastern half of Russia in the second division, and they went head to head in Khabarovsk, which is so far east in Russia that it's close to the border of China's easternmost point. And I think, yeah, the reason that this fixture stood out to me was because it was just between these two teams that faced these mammoth away days. So Yenisei Krasnoyarsk, their closest away day is 1,800 kilometers. And for Khabarovsk, this was their closest rival, 3,000 kilometers away. So you've just got these huge distances. And it means that these two teams are just covering tens of thousands of kilometers per season to complete their fixtures. I think Khabarovsk actually in total travel 100,000 kilometers per season to fulfill their away fixtures. And that's 2.5 times the circumference of the globe.
That's absolutely great. So this would be a local derby for them, mm-hmm. except they're absolutely nowhere near each other in real terms. It's like a European away day for a team in England. But for them, this is as close as it gets. It's absolutely incredible that they can do that, that they can even just carry on being in this league, really.
I don't know what that's like for the players, because they must just be travelling all the time. They must just have the feeling that they're always in the air. I think between sort of the westernmost club in that division and Khabarovsk, there's something like 8 time zones as well. So it's not just the distances. You're also factoring in huge time zone differences. I mentioned there that Yenisei Krasnoyarsk's closest away day is 1,800 kilometres. The club in question is FC Tyumen. And we actually have a listener that supports FC Tyumen. That's Andrew Flint. He's messaged us before about his trip to Vladivostok to run a marathon and asking if we had any listeners in North Korea. And Paul, we've actually got some most remote listener news, because do you remember we had the chat about Norfolk Island a few months back?
Yep.
We had a listener who had traveled to Norfolk Island on holiday and listened to the pod. And we said that that was the most remote place that anyone had ever listened to an episode of The Sweeper, with around 2,000 inhabitants. Well, I checked the data the other day, and we had somebody that listened to the pod on New Island. That's N-I-U-E. I've never heard of it before, but it's in the Pacific between the Cook Islands and Tonga. Population, 1,620.
Yes, Niue.
Niue.
Yeah, and furthermore, I have football-based track record with Niue. So Niue is fascinating because it was in Oceania Football Confederation for several years. It was a member. And then the Oceania Football Confederation appeared to forget Niue was a member. Niue didn't make any contact. Football sort of just died out. A new group of people, like maybe a decade on, started to run football in Niue again, realised, wait a minute, aren't we a member of Oceania Football Confederation? Messaged them and were told, because of your inactivity, you've now been removed from Oceania Football Confederation. So it appears Oceania had them as members for years and just never got rid of them. But nobody really knew they were. It's an incredible story. But yeah, that's why I know of Niue. And it's amazing to think we've got a listener there. Maybe it is one of the current crop of players, because there are actually quite a lot of people playing futsal and football on Niue at the moment, apparently.
Well, if you are the Niue Island listener, we'll put a post out on Twitter and Instagram as well, because that's how we managed to track down the last most remote listener. But you do have to get in touch at sweeperpod@gmail.com. We need to find out who that is. That's another life goal, along with the Indian Ocean Games for me. Let's move on to our next topic now. We're going to talk about cup sets and second division clubs that are progressing really well in their domestic cup competitions. Ochiru, our Mongolian cyclist friend, was at Wembley to see the semi-finals of the FA Cup between his beloved Manchester United and Coventry. So Man United won one of the most dramatic games of football I've seen in recent times. Unfortunately for sweeper lovers, underdogs Coventry did not make it through, but we did have a second-tier club whose name begins with C and has 8 letters get through to the cup final in another country, didn't we? So let's hop on over to Romania next.
In Romania, it's Corvinul who have made the Romanian Cup final. They beat FC Voluntari, and they will now book their place to play Otsilul Galați in the final. Now, you may ask, how rare is this in Romania? They're actually the 15th team from the lower leagues in Romania to reach the Cup final. So that actually sounds like a fairly decent number, but a lot of these were some way back. The most recent club were FC Hermannstadt, who reached the final in 2018. And only 3 times has the Romanian Cup been won by a lower league club. The last time was in 1973, and it was Chimia Râmnicu Vâlcea, I think. I mean, that is what's written on my screen, but how many of those letters were correct, I don't know.
But I mean, Ocul and Galatch were also in the second tier until fairly recently, weren't they? Because that's a previous Champions League participant, I remember there. So whoever wins this is going to be probably winning a first trophy in quite some time.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating matchup for that reason. It's also interesting because Corvino have an entirely Romanian squad, which is not altogether normal. They had a Brazilian and an Estonian at the start of the season, but I think both of those have left. They also, I think, have some youth players who are foreign, but they're not in the match day senior squad. So it's quite a rare feat to get that far with an entirely domestic squad in Romania. So that in itself is quite notable. And they seem pretty happy about it. They posted a photo of the entire team on Twitter, the entire squad, all topless, doing a sort of like muscle pose after their semi-final win, which I thought was, it certainly will appeal to some of our listeners.
Was that Corvinal or Ocul Galatch that did that photo?
Corvinal did the photo, because I think Corvinal are going pretty crazy about this. I think for them, it's like a really huge deal that they've reached this final, whereas I think Ocul Galatch have a little bit more recent pedigree at that level.
Corvinal are interesting, I think, from another point of view for us, because they're one of these rapid risers. So they only won the third division last season. They're currently top in the second tier this season. And they've got this weird situation where they cannot be promoted, but they could play in Europe if they won the cup, because apparently they don't currently have the correct license to go up. And this has been rectified ahead of next season. Next season, they'll be eligible for promotion. But if they win the cup, they could then go into European competition without playing in the Romanian top tier.
Oh, that is always really interesting. And it's certainly not a club that I knew much about. And they're from a place that I didn't know existed. They're from Transylvania, which I did know existed, but they're from Hunedoara, which I must admit I'd never heard about. So really lovely to see a club enjoying some success like this, and really excited to see how they get on in the final.
Have you been sneakily working away at your Romanian pronunciation? That sounded pretty good to me.
I actually briefly learned some Romanian because my sisters run a charity in Moldova. So I went out to Romania, I went out to Moldova, but also Romania en route a few times. And I found I could get bits of the pronunciation, and then other bits I was useless at. So I really confused local people. Basically, it's confusing to Romanians if you try and speak their language at all, because so few people do. In addition to that, I would hit certain words really well and they'd think, wow, this guy can speak. And then I'd say another word terribly and they'd just be completely baffled by me.
Yeah, I think many language learners can empathize with that. I certainly can. There are plenty of other second division clubs that are in the running in their domestic cup this season. So I'll run through a bit of a list of them. In Kosovo, you have FC Suhareka in the semifinals. In Luxembourg, both Hostert and the brilliantly named Yellow Boys of the Division of Honor are in the quarterfinals. In Slovenia, there's an all second tier semi-final between Gorica and Beltinci. In Hungary, the second tier leaders Nyíregy Háza are in the semi-finals. Wisla Krakow of Poland in the final. In Israel, Hapoel Nof Hagalil are in the semi-finals. Switzerland, Sion with the crazy owner in the semis. And in Germany, Kaiserslautern in the final against Bayer Leverkusen. Do any of those sort of stand out to you?
Well, I think the one that's received the most press is probably Kaiserslautern, isn't it? And I think in a way, the German Cup has been really fascinating because most of the attention for the whole run was on this miraculous Saarbrücken run, right? And then suddenly Kaiserslautern, who have their own fascinating recent history, are in the final. And it's funny because I remember them as a big club, you know, growing up. If you were to name 10 German teams, they certainly would have made it. Maybe if you name 8, they would have made it. So it's quite interesting seeing them now in there as a real minnow. I don't know if you have one, Lee, that you've been sort of keeping an eye on in that way.
Probably following Germany a lot as well, to be honest, because it wasn't just Saarbrücken. There was also Fortuna Düsseldorf in the semi-finals. So I think Bayer Leverkusen were the only top-tier team in the semis. So the German one has been particularly interesting. I'm also following the Macedonian Cup as well, because that's quite interesting. It's not second tier teams, but the final will be taking place between Tikveš and Voska Sport. Neither team has reached the final before, so there will be a guaranteed new winner, which will be nice. And Tikveš is a name that is firmly in my mind because they were the team, and I don't know if you remember this, a few years ago they had an away game against Struga whose stadium is basically on the shores of Lake Ohrid, one of, to my mind, the most beautiful places in Europe. And they couldn't fit into the tiny away section in the Struga ground. And so instead, they hired boats and just watched from the lake.
Yes, I do. I do remember that. It's absolutely fantastic, isn't it? Because as you say, FC Struga have been mentioned by us because they are currently leading the Macedonian top tier, but have a ground with a capacity of, I think, 800. So absolutely tiny. And again, were only founded in their current incarnation 9 years ago. So another sort of sweeper topics that we cover a lot, a club that have come up really quickly and also are from a really tiny place, but are leading their national league.
We've mentioned both Ocelu Galac and Kaiserslautern on this pod segment. What do both of them have in common?
Oh, wow. I feel like this is next level quiz question, isn't it? Is it that they've played in a famous match in the past?
I will give you a clue. There are some other clubs in this category. Blackburn, Deportivo La Coruña, Bordeaux, Malaga, Hamburg.
It's not to do with their nickname or their kit or anything like that?
No, it's to do with them all being former Champions League group stage participants who were subsequently relegated.
Can see why I didn't get it.
We did a thread on this not so long ago. We did a thread of the 16 teams that were formerly in the group stage and were then relegated. Of course, Ocelu Galac have come back up to the Romanian top tier. But yeah, I realize that may have been a slightly tough trivia question.
Well, also, I think our listeners will realize which one of us did that thread now.
Most probably. But the reason I bring up those clubs in question is because we've got some news about a couple of them. So Bursaspor, one of the only two non-Istanbul clubs to win the Super League. They played in the Champions League 2010 to 2011, played against Manchester United, and they've since gone on something of a decline, relegated to the second division, then relegated to the third division, and just recently they've been relegated to the fourth tier for the first time ever. So from the Champions League to the fourth division of Turkish football in the space of 13 years. And a lot of people will know Bursaspor because they're nicknamed the Yeşil Timsaklar, which means the green crocodiles. And they've got this big crocodile stadium that can fit around 50,000 people in it. And now it's going to be hosting fourth tier football.
Yeah, and I think we touched on this in the newsletter a little while back when they were starting to struggle in the third tier. It's going to be absolutely incredible that stadium is going to now host teams that get average attendances of a couple of thousand. It's a very rapid decline. I think it's, again, one of these ones where the club was mismanaged and misrun by an owner, isn't it? I think, and just have financially imploded to the point where they've struggled to even keep a team on the pitch, I think. So yeah, really sad decline there.
Mm. And the other one, Malaga. This is a slightly funnier story. It comes from Matt Harrison, one of our patrons, who also hosts a Malaga podcast. People might remember Malaga reached the Champions League quarterfinals in 2013, where they came within a whisker of getting to the last four, only for Borussia Dortmund to produce some incredible last-minute drama. And recently, now in the third tier, they beat Atletico Madrid B 1-0. And after the game, one of the players, Danny Lorenzo, went over to the away fans to thank them for their support. And he was asked by an away supporter for his shirt, but he couldn't give his shirt away because each player gets 6 free shirt giveaways per season and he'd have had to pay for a replacement. So the fan offered him €50, he whipped off his shirt and gave it to him.
Oh, that's very funny. Yeah, I have heard that about clubs at certain levels where if people are asking for their shirt, then they are literally giving away their shirt and they will have to buy a new one. So it does take on a slightly different complexion, doesn't it? That's brilliant. Yeah, I would say if anyone wants to know more about Malaga and wants to learn more about the club, Matt Harrison at Matt Lost Boyo on Twitter is always a fantastic source of information. I enjoy following him a lot.
Any other business that you wanted to mention before we round off today's pod?
No, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. That is pretty much everything I've got, I think.
Just remember, you can still enter the Icarus competition for the Thimphu City trip of a lifetime to Bhutan. All you have to do is buy your Thimphu City shirt at IcarusFC.com, and that competition is open, I think, for around another week. So we'll probably have more news about the lucky winner either on the next pod or the one after. But apart from that, that's it from us today. Do check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/sweeperpod. And we will see you for the next episode on, let me work out when the next Wednesday is, Paul. Wednesday, the 1st of May.
I was really struggling with how many days April has there.
Yeah, it was a tough one. That's it, listeners. Wednesday, the 1st of May. We'll see you then.